Hey, everybody. We're back with the Oversharing Show. Another six episode. This is 6.6. And we got a lot of really good feedback from our last episode, so we're very excited about that. And I think everybody likes the topic. So, of course, we decided we had to tie up some loose ends and talk about what we talked about in last show and add some more and overshare some more, because that's what we do. Isn't that right, Sharon?
We do.
What's up, Sharon?
We do best.
Exactly. How you doing today?
Great, as usual.
Lovely. Well, that's good to hear. So I know the first thing we're going to do is to kind of summarize what we talked about last week this way, if someone's new or if, you know, they don't exactly remember. I mean, I can't imagine that. I'm sure everybody we know watched it 1,000 times. They probably memorized it because they love us so much. But if you didn't, we'll give a brief summarization for those few who forgot.
Yeah, well, one of the things we talked about was a potentially better philosophy on dating or courting or whatever you want to call it. It is what it is. It's meeting people, deciding whether they're going to be the right person for you. But we talked about meeting people in community and getting to know each other before introducing romance into the equation. So we talked about things like not having any expectations, just letting things happen naturally, because, you know, it just invariably happens that when you get like romantic with someone, then it makes it much, much harder to like back out of that when you realize something's not going to work. Or like you start seeing the red flags, but then oops, you already started being romantic with them and you're already calling them baby and honey and darling. And then you're like, oh shit, like, I don't know how this is going to work because I don't like that behavior. And I know that that's like, that is really part of them and they may not, you know, stop doing that. So it makes sense to like meet someone, get to know them, become familiar with the way they are as people, the way they behave, the things they do, because if you can be friends with them at the very, very least, if you can be friends with them, then something can build on that. Romance can build on, absolutely can build on that. Why not? So we talked about those kinds of things. And we talked about how, you know, people say that, you know, two people can't just be friends because someone's always going to end up being more attracted to the other person. And just some thoughts that I didn't share back in that episode, but that I want to just touch upon a little bit more are that like lots of people can be attractive. Like you can be attracted, like let's say there's a group of, you know, 50 people or 20 people. What if you find multiple of those people attractive? Like, does that mean you have to date them all? I mean, no. What happened to just like standing back and just allowing things to be? Attraction doesn't have to be equivalent to dating somebody, you know? Yeah, being okay with just being attracted to somebody and letting it be okay and not letting your expectations run wild over just being attracted to someone. So those are some of the things we talked about. But one thing we didn't emphasize that much was the importance of setting boundaries. And I can speak from experience about this. And it's funny because it's almost like divine source or whatever you want to call it has just given me the opportunity over time to just ensure that my boundaries are being set up because, you know, it started off with like back in the beginning of the year, maybe March timeframe, it just got pulled into this like romance, this long distance romance, like all of a sudden. And I didn't even take the time to really say, what's going on here? What am I doing? Why am I allowing this? And not taking the time to say, okay, I know that I should just be friends with this person first before like jumping into anything. That's what my logical side tells me, right? But I allowed my emotions to like just go, and I just ran with it. But it's okay. Everything happens for a reason. It was meant to be a lesson, and I'm okay with that. But you know, that happens, and then you know, it invariably it ends, because that wasn't going to be something that lasted, right? So, and which is, oh, totally okay. So fast forward a few months, several months, and it almost happened, like it happens again. But this time the situation is a little different. I mean, it's still the fact that I didn't like set boundaries for myself, mm-hmm. and I just kind of let things go into something, and I naively let myself think that, oh no, it's okay. I just want to be friends with this person. But if I put myself in a situation where I'm alone with that person, and then I'm maybe have a couple of drinks, and then I'm tipsy, and then, okay, so then what happens, right? It's like, if I put myself in those situations, then I'm allowing things to happen that I might not have allowed if I had just set my boundaries and told myself, okay, this is how it's going to be. This is how I have to tell this other person what it's going to be like, you know, but I didn't do that. And I'm not blaming anybody but my own self. Right. And nothing terrible happened. Everything's fine. It's just that I put myself in a situation where it could have been bad, right? It could have been a bad situation if it had been with a different person, right? But it just goes to show that I need to set my boundaries and make sure that the other person is aware of those boundaries as well. And don't put myself in those situations where I might be able to like let my guard down, right? So I think that's really important, to set those boundaries. And then I say this because in a small community of people, of like-minded people that, you know, in which we find ourselves, some of us are in this like bear community. And, you know, there's, you know, it could be any community, but if you're in this smaller community, you don't want to be in awkward situations. And if you get yourself to a point where you're like with somebody and then you're with someone else, it just like, it can become awkward, because then it's like, oh, well, we were together for like however long, and then it didn't work out because it got awkward, it got weird, or whatever happened. And then now, like, can you see each other in public? Is that okay? Is it weird? Is there animosity? So it's just a protection for yourself. And, yeah, so that's something we didn't really get into, but I just wanted to bring that up and not forget to say that.
Yeah, I think that's really important, because, you know, I hate to bring this example, but if you date somebody that you work with, right, you know that if it doesn't work out, you're going to have to see them again every day, potentially, whatever it is. So if you're part of a community in that, what makes that community, that bond, is what you like, and you like people who have that thinking. So that's why you're looking for somebody who's in this community or is adjacent or whatever, adjacent to that community, then you're right. You do have to be careful, because, I mean, you don't have to be, but it's better, because if this is something you could not be thinking about ahead of time, you could just be jumping into something. And then now you have to see this person all the time, you know? So it's like, uh-oh, what did I do? And it could get very awkward. And that might cause you to not want to hang out with that group, or that other person, you know, might cause some weirdness. So these are just things to look out for. And I think also establishing the boundaries is good, because you kind of let the other person know up front that you have some quality to you, you know, and if they don't respond well, then you don't even really have to hang out with them, because then you already know that they're not really looking for the same thing you are. But if they respond well, then it might work out even better, because then it might fast forward something because they could see you're a quality person, and it goes from there. Or you just maybe hang out, there's no chemistry, and you're just friends, and you just stay friends, you know?
Right.
Again, there's no expectation, because like you said, especially in this, and I think we talked about this, I know we've talked about this a lot, I don't know if we've talked about it on air, but when you put yourself in a situation like that, especially in the society, if a guy's asking a girl to go out and have drinks and stuff, sometimes there's expectations there that people have. And another thing too, is people get stuck in trauma cycles, and they kind of just go along with it. Like, they might not have the intention of going somewhere and doing something, you know, but they go out and they're having a couple of drinks, and then they just maybe fall into a fear or like some old pattern, and then they just can't do anything. And then they end up, you know, sleeping with the person or who knows. So,
right. Right. Because once you let your guard down and you say, you know, I speak from experience in the sense of like, I've recently decided to just not have any drinks right now. I mean, I don't know if I'll always be that way, but for now I'm just like not drinking, because I noticed that like, okay, I go to my brother's house and then, you know, somebody would be like, hey, do you want, you want some drink? Or my brother would serve me something. And of course, invariably it just, I'm like, oh, I'll just have a little bit. And then they serve you like that much. Yeah. And you're like, okay, I didn't want to drink that much, you know? Yeah. So then you end up drinking. And then, you know, by the time the night goes on, you kept saying, yeah, I'll have a little more and a little more and a little more, and a little more turns into you drank all night. And then you're going home and you're just like tired and you feel like crap, and you try to sleep and you feel like crap, and you wake up in the morning, you feel like crap. And I'm just like, I'm kind of done feeling like crap after I drink. And it's not that I mean to feel like crap afterward, because I really literally only intended to have like that much. I just wanted to sip on it. Well, once I was done sipping, someone came around and refilled me or something, you know, and then I kept sipping, and then it just never ended. So these days I'm just like, no, I'm okay right now. And then I don't have anything and I feel great. I get to go home with no hangovers or anything. but I forgot where I was going with that. The trauma of like the cycle of you let yourself fall into these like patterns. And so, yeah, like, it's not like you're trying, you didn't intend to, but it just ends up happening that you, by doing one little thing and letting your guard down just a little bit, it ends up setting you up for that. So it's very true.
Yeah. And that's what happens in a one-on-one situation. That's why it's better, like we were saying earlier, to get into situations with a bunch of people, with friends, and everyone's friends, and then everyone hangs out and we see what happens, you know?
Yeah. Because like you said, hopefully no one's going to try something in a big group of people. But
yeah, you know. Yeah. Well, then, yeah, exactly.
Depends really on who the people are.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
If there are no expectations and you're all just friends, yeah, I get it. And it doesn't have to be that everyone's like single in that group either. I mean, there could be couples and children around too. It's like, it's community. It's whoever's around. And like I said, people keep you accountable too. Like, your friends will keep you accountable. And if like this person's a new person to the group, and then all of a sudden they feel like, you know, they're flirting with you or something like that, they might tell you something later, like, you know, we're just, you know, we're keeping an eye, you know, that's what friends are for.
Exactly. That's what friends are for.
I just heard that song the other day too. It's such a weird song. It's weird. I never really liked it, because I grew up, I know this is kind of oversharing, but I'm going to do it.
How dare you?
Because I was thinking about it the other day. When I was in elementary school, I think it was Mr. Strader was our music teacher, and he would like play all these songs. He would make us sing all these songs. And I know he played a lot of Beatles, and he would make us sing a lot of Beatles. And then, but he played this this song too, I remember it. And I just always thought it was such a weird song. And the voice of the person singing, I didn't even know who this person was. Because mind you, again, I grew up under a rock. So I didn't know who this person was. And I guess it's Dionne Warwick. And to me, I thought that's a dude's name. Like, right?
The cards don't lie, man. She does that too. Yeah, that's Dionne Warwick.
God, okay. So I didn't know, right? I literally only found this out like maybe less than 6 months ago who that person was. Because it's funny because Cody and I were sending each other music videos and he sent me that. I sent him that or he sent me that one time or something. And then I was like, dude, I didn't know that was a chick. I mean, it sounds kind of like a dude. Looks kind of like a dude. I mean, I don't know.
Is it a dude? Who knows? How dare you assume their their gender?
I don't know. Sharon, how dare you assume their gender? Well, how dare they like not make themselves look more like what they're supposed to look like? I don't know. I'm just saying. I'm kidding. Sorry.
I mean, name is Dionne, so.
I know. It's kind of weird. So anyway, the song's weird. I feel like that song's weird. And it felt kind of awkward too, I think, because if I'm not mistaken, it might've been the song that he made me sing with this other boy. And I was like, if that was the song, cause I don't even remember anymore, but we had to sing it in like a choir in like a school setting and where we had to like sing it almost to each, I can't remember what it was. It was like a kind of a love song. If it wasn't that one, there was a love song that I had to sing with this boy that I had a freaking crush on. And it was awkward and weird. And so I had to like sing a song to this. It was so weird. Maybe that's why I don't like this song. I don't know.
That's funny. I don't want to be friends, damn it. No.
So yeah, anyway, but like speaking of childhood, it brings us to the topic of people being stuck in like a childlike point of view, like moving on your impulses. And you were saying something about that, if you wanted to talk more about that.
Yeah, well, we brought up the topic of circumcision. We could just start right there. You might as well, because I felt like my whole life I've had a lot of rage issues. And when I think back to like what it's about, I know like if I was ever hit. So I used to think it was because I was hit when I was younger, not like beat, but like spanked or whatever, you know? I mean, I guess sometimes I might've been smacked in the face. I can't remember. I probably said something that deserved it though. I was pretty witty, but yeah, it was definitely some of that. So I thought back on that a lot when I was older, and I was thinking about how all that time when that was happening, all I could think about was fighting back, and like I get hurt, so then I want to hurt somebody. So, and I think I took a lot of that out my younger brothers also. But then when I came across the topic of circumcision and people were starting to question it and whether it's like, you know, whether it's something we should do or not, I was somebody who was circumcised, and I was thinking about, wow, because I came across it a while ago how it was probably a practice allegedly done to slaves, to keep slaves. It was a psychological thing because you wound them right away. You take them away from their parents. You wound them on like the most sensitive part of their body.
Messed up.
And it's a scar. Yeah. So I was thinking that as a baby, that's probably was my reaction. I probably was like, ooh, look at this realm. And then all of a sudden somebody chops off the tip of my dick. And I'm like, yo, what the fuck was that about? Right. So I'm sure there's a lot of rage that even begins there. And it kind of perpetuates that cycle. Because I was a child and because I was locked in that rage, I wasn't able to see beyond what was going on. So I think that rage poured into other aspects of my life. So I started to womanize women. I was like, I started to be a womanizer. And so I think it was like that because there was a rage aspect. I kind of wanted to do harm, but not in a physical way. But, and I also noticed how a lot of women in society started to like rough sex. It came in like when I was in the Marines, it was this thing that started coming across, like girls wanted to be like spanked and like grabbed or like pushed on the bed and stuff like this, like just a little rough stuff. And so some people really get into it. So, and then thinking back on that, it's like, wow, maybe you're just really trying to hurt this person, but you know, you, but since you're a nice like a nice guy or a woman or whatever, you don't want to hurt this other person physically, but you find this other way to do it. And you're kind of doing it emotionally. And when you're having sex with them, it's like a violent act. So I think that, and then if a child, geez, think about if a child is born from that violent act, you know, of sex, because that's a lot. We're going to get into that a little later about porn and stuff, but that's a lot that's in the porn industry too. It's like a perpetuation of this violence, this trauma, this cycle. And instead of dealing with it in a healthy way, if you get hit, you just want to hit somebody back. It's a natural response. It really is, you know, and it borders up with like self-defense, because sometimes you are able to employ force to stop somebody, and you're in the right. So, but I think as we see these cycles with children and like children raising children, as it seems, I think this is like the main gateway of it, you know, is the trauma, is the violence, and the rage, especially with males. I could say that's probably really what locks a lot of the males in. That was my experience anyway. I mean, I still deal with it, but I've been able to step out of it and walk around it. And like you said earlier, set boundaries. So now I can use that aspect of myself to set boundaries, and it's a lower tone, it's a lower volume, and I don't have to get as crazy. Because what I would do was I would let people kind of walk all over me, or I'd do things, or I'd let a situation happen I wasn't comfortable with. Instead of saying something or setting a boundary, I would just let it happen until I was like, that's it, this is enough. And I would just freak out. So instead of doing that, I'm just letting off slower, like it's a release valve. And I see that helps with the rage, you know. But that's, again, I think that's really a lot of this has to do with that, is the rage. And people, you know, it's not like it's a big secret. There's a lot of people have anger issues, but I think that it's just not looked at. It's like people treat symptoms. They're not actually looking at what the cause is, you know. So,
yeah.
Let me see. Was there anything else that I want to talk about in there? I think that was it as far as the rage thing. Looking at the notes, did you want to add anything to that?
Nothing comes to mind. I suppose I could think about rage in any relationships I've been in, and I've seen that in the most recent relationship I was in for 8 years. And there was definitely some like deep-seated anger going on, deep-seated resentment toward the feminine. Huge. And it's interesting because we talked about it when we first met, and it stemmed from the relationship with the mother. And the interesting part is that he seems to have made peace with his mother and the relationship with her. And he was able to reach out to her and speak with her and be on, you know, civil terms with her. After some years, you know, sometime after he and I talked about it and we were able to talk through some of those things, he was able to reach out to her and talk to her and these things. But the thing is, it never got to the point where it healed whatever rage or animosity or anger he had toward just the feminine in general, because he was still using that as a resentment toward me, even though I had never done anything to necessarily I had never done anything that was going to or anything that, what's the word I'm looking for? Dang it. Anyway, I didn't feel like it didn't match, right? I didn't do anything.
Oh, like I didn't do anything to deserve.
Yeah, I didn't do anything to deserve.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's not the word I'm looking for, but
yeah.
it's better. So I didn't feel like I did anything to deserve that. And it just never really got better. It's almost like there was a resentment there and it stayed because of whatever rage, anger he had toward the feminine. And it was very, very interesting because, and I would at some point like to do a topic, a discussion on narcissism, not to say that he was, but if anything, he displayed some of those attributes. And last year when I decided to walk away from the relationship, I had actually done so because I came to the conclusion that he was a narcissist. And again, I'm not saying today that he was, it's just that that's where I was a year ago. And that's what made me finally say, you know what, this isn't changing. I need to walk away from this. And so I would like to talk about that someday, maybe on a different episode where we can talk more about what that's all about. But there was definitely anger, hurt, pain, wounding, childhood wounding that he never was able to heal. And because of that, it just manifested itself as an adult in his relationships with women. And it was just like one after the other. He would be with a woman and then they wouldn't work. And then he'd be with another one. It wouldn't work. And then it would be another one. It wouldn't work. And then it was just a long one. And then that wouldn't work. And then another long one. And then that wouldn't, like, that's basically what it ended up being for him. But he could never emotionally open up. He could never bring that wall down. And that was the really, really tragic and sad part of it all. Because I would have liked to have been able to help him, but he didn't want the help. He was very, very threatened by me as a woman and as the strong woman that I am, because I've been told that. I'm not just saying that because I feel like I'm strong or anything, but
I've said it. So she's a strong woman, everybody. If you have a problem with that, you could take it up with me.
But, you know, I have a strong personality to me, to myself, and that was very threatening for him, I can imagine. So he couldn't deal with that. And he couldn't open up. So I don't know where was I going with that? What were we talking about?
You were talking about how he was displaying some characteristics of a narcissist and how you decided you want to end it and everything, stuff like that. And then how he just was basically going from one relationship to another, like short ones and longer ones. There's like a rhythm to it.
Yeah. But you were talking about, what did you end with that you said, do you want to talk about?
Oh, just the rage.
Yeah. Rage. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
No problem.
I went in circles.
No, you're good. There's more I have to say too when you're done that I remember, but go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. So yes, there was definitely deep-seated anger and rage, and he was like I said, we had talked about this before, but I didn't know what narcissism was at the time. I didn't know what these narcissistic traits were. But somehow I would bring it up that, you know, he could open up, if he could talk, if we could just, you know, share. And I would tell him, like, you can be vulnerable with me. Like, we can talk about these things. This is what, it's okay. It's okay to do that. And, he would say, no, he couldn't do it. And I can't, like, it's not like I said, it's not like I knew the terminology. So it's not like I was telling him what to do, but somehow I would say something to him about, you know, healing those traumas or whatever. I don't know how I was saying it, but he would invariably end up saying that no, he couldn't do it and he wasn't going to do it because it was too hard. It was too difficult. It was too painful and he just wasn't going to do it. And he said that to me multiple times, like, cause we had the conversation multiple times. And so he knew.
Yeah.
He knew something was wrong and he didn't want to, fix it. That's very tragic, but.
Well, you know, everyone has their own, I'm just fixing my thing so I can, little comic relief, my new cool stone. You know, everyone has their own way of looking at the world. So for him, he just wasn't ready yet. And it just was too hard. You know, for people like me, the way I was looking at everything was very logical. And once it made sense to me, once I can make it make sense, I was like, oh, this is the only way that I got to figure this shit out, you know. But some people, everyone has a different path, you know. And that kind of leads me to what happened when I was younger. I experienced some trauma as well. And you know, we talk about ways to deal with it and what happens, you know, because I talked about being circumcised, but I also experienced some trauma from another person when I was younger. And it's something I had to overcome and deal with. And the way that I look at it now is if somebody wrongs you or say they do something to you that's like considered offensive or hurt you or whatever, a lot of times people are attracted to your energy. There's something about you that they're attracted to. And because of their illnesses and what the, you know, because of what happened to them that was piled onto them by their parents. And then all the shit that they're moving in the world, like, you know, you said, that gentleman or whatever is probably displaying some narcissistic characteristics, but whatever it is, man, did I just use what I was saying? I don't, what's going on today, Oversharing? We're oversharing in circles, Sharon.
I just called you oversharing. And what you said made me think of something I do want to talk about too.
Okay. I'll finish because I remember now. So basically what it is, people, because of their wounds, they interact with you differently. So it's going to come out screwed up. So like, for example, I wanted to be around certain people and I couldn't express it fully, and especially females, so I would just have sex with them. But now I have a lot of friends who are females that I do not have sex with. I mean, you know, I haven't had sex in it's been a while. So I have some friends now, and now instead of this, we will still hang out, whatever, but I'll do tarot readings and we talk about different stuff and aspects of their relationship and their life, and I connect with them on that level. So we're still sharing an energy together, but we're just, it's not a sexual experience. So it's still an exchange of energy and it still helps me out and still positive, in a way. I'm trying to think of if I'm saying that right. Yeah, it helps me definitely because it's a positive exchange of energy. So, it's a much healthier way to do it. So now because I've healed my past trauma and I don't want to cause pain to the sacred feminine, because you were talking about this earlier too, there's this feminine and masculine. And if you're younger and you're wounded by the feminine, a lot of men, they're wounded by their mom or perceived to be wounded. Something happens, you know, they feel like they were abandoned or whatever because they got dropped off at school. Who knows what it was, right? Maybe some shit really did happen, right? But children, we never know how they're going to perceive it. So they perceive it in a way, and now they're just mad at women and they're mad at that feminine. So they're going around. And like I said, in my example, I was womanizing and I was, it was like, not that I wanted to cause harm, but I was just out to, I don't know. It's hard to explain because I wasn't doing it consciously, but now looking back at my actions, that's what was going on. So at some level I must've been wanting to do it. Right. Does that make sense? So it's not like I was like, I got to get these bitches. it wasn't. Yeah. I figured you'd like that one. So now, because I seen the harm that I've caused in other people, I can go back and see a time when they quote unquote harmed me. And I could be like, oh, maybe they were just trying to get close to me because I was a special person, because their wounds, they had to do it in a way that was just not acceptable or harmful or whatever. And I could see that and I could see them as a person and I could just let it go. I don't have to look at myself as a victim. Like, oh my God, look what happened to me. you know, now I'm gonna have these terrible nightmares and stuff. You know, I can't believe that they ate my Captain Crunch. It's so terrible. It was so good. I had it laid out and they just came and ate it. So whatever it is that happened to you, if you look at it that way, it's just a way to release it, because really at the end of the day, you're not forgiving that person for what you're doing. You're just letting yourself go as a victim. You're not a victim anymore. You're just like, listen, I'm not a victim. I don't have to hang out with this person or even call them or whatever. I don't have to think about them, but I know that they weren't conscious of what they're doing. It's like, forgive them, Lord, for they know not what they do. Even those people allegedly strung up Jesus Christ and hung him, he said, forgive them, Lord, for they don't know what they do. They don't know what the fuck they're doing. They're just following orders. They're just living, you know, they're just dead. They're brain dead, basically. You know, they're not at that next consciousness level where they realize what they're even doing. They're just playing their part. They're just doing what they think they should to get along. And it's not an excuse, but if you look at it from that point of view, you can let them go and you can forgive them. And again, it goes with setting boundaries. So you can still set the boundaries. Like if Jesus was able to like fall off the cross, he doesn't have to say, oh, he could run away and try to, you know, I guess that's a bad example. But like if you're getting robbed, you know, you don't have to like, you don't have to go all John Wick and murder their whole family or whatever, you know, like, I don't know. Anyway, so that's kind of what I wanted to say about that, because I think I left that part out of it a little bit about my own personal experiences. And then you shared your story. So it was great. And you know what I also want to say about that too, and I'm sure you know this, but there's a very large scale of whatever this thing called narcissism is. So some people will start to display it. And I've heard people make claims that narcissists can't be cured. And let me tell you something. I definitely was displaying many symptoms of what would be called narcissistic behavior. And I mean, I'm fucking fine now. Maybe I was just a crazy case, but it's because of this work that I had to do. Yeah, I could have said, oh, I'm fine now. And I could have acted like that. And, you know, that's true. And I wouldn't tell you to trust most people if they tell you they changed. Doesn't matter about words. You know, in America, words are cheap. I want to see your actions. But if this person starts displaying actions, if they start, like for me, for example, I haven't, you know, like I said, I haven't had sex like since 2019 or something. And all my interactions with women now, it's like from a healthy place. And, you know, talking about their life and help and trauma and all this, whatever this stuff. So people, you can change, because I think if somebody are displaying these tendencies, at the end of the day, there's a lot of self-hate. And that's where I had, because I realized I was a piece of shit at the end of the day. So I kind of hated myself, but since I had a little self-esteem, it just perpetuated the cycle. So it didn't really matter. But now that I can see that I have more self-love, and that I wouldn't want to do that, because I wouldn't be able to live with myself at the end of the day. Not that I would like kill myself, but it would, that bad feeling that I got, it would just be too much. And that actually brings it to another point that I probably forgot about. Is this the time to part where,
no,
I talk
hold
about,
on, hold on. Okay, right, just
hold my horses. All right. Okay.
But you were saying,
sorry. God.
Okay.
My horse. Did you hear that or no?
Yes, I did.
My horse.
So you were talking about, I lost my train of thought of what I wanted to say, what you were just talking about, but maybe I'll remember. But what you were saying before that was, it made me think of people who are attracting the same kind of person over time. They're like their unhealed person. Like they haven't healed from their wounds, from their childhood wounds. And they keep attracting the same person that still treats them badly, or however you want to say that, right? So I think you have to want to, that's what I wanted to say about narcissistic people or narcissistic tendencies, people with those tendencies, is that they have to want to change. And the problem is that on the extremes of like, whether you're severely, extremely narcissistic, or if you're not, if you're mildly narcissistic, I think the extreme is that if you're mild to like moderate, you have the potential to want to make changes and be able to come out of it. It's the extremely narcissistic people who, for whatever reason, have come to this point where their childhood was so extremely, whatever you want to call it, so bad that they see no possible way out. As much as they want to, they have no ability mentally, emotionally, physically, they have no ability to even want to come out to do the work. I should say, it's not that they don't want to, they would like
to. They're just comfortable. Some people are comfortable, but go ahead.
Right. But it's such a painful thought.
Oh yeah.
To know that you have to go through pain in order to get out, that they're not willing to go through the pain. And that's what I saw in my last boyfriend. He couldn't even think of like going through the pain to get out of that feeling that he had, which was abandonment or whatever it was that caused him to be resentful toward women in the end. Right. Cause of course these narcissistic behaviors are cyclical. So they can get you to think that, you know, they want you back. They'll what's called Hoover. They'll Hoover you back in, like Hoover, like a vacuum. I mean, they'll Hoover you back in.
Oh, I thought you meant like the dam. No, I'm just kidding.
Not the Hoover dam.
Because when they Hoover you back in, you're like, damn. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry. That was a terrible joke. Just
kidding. Well, it's a dam, so it stays in. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. So they get you back, and then they, you know, they give you whatever attention or whatever it is that gets you back in. And then they eventually get sick of that. And then they like say things to hurt you. But it's just like over and over, it's just like a cycle, and it just keeps going. So I forgot where I was going with that, but these people have extremes. Like there's an extreme of, you know, mild narcissistic tendencies to the extremes. But that was a different topic. And I want to go back to what I was talking about, attracting the same type of person over time, is that if you can heal those traumas that happened to you from childhood, and you know, do the inner work and begin to comprehend where you're at, your situation, what hurt you, how you can heal from that, you can potentially get to a point where you're not attracting those same type of people, and you're attracting people more on your level, because allegedly you attract the people that are at your level, right? If you are allowing, without your boundaries, you're allowing certain people in your life, then those are the people that are going to be able to get in the door, right? But if you set your good boundaries, not walls that are like impermeable, but walls that are set up for the purpose of like gauging people and like, you know, deciding who's okay to allow in, right? Then, you know, you're on the right track to attracting people who are on a higher vibration and more along your vibration, which is the healing vibration, you know, continue spiraling up, not down.
Yeah. That's anyway. What helped me. That's really what helped me. Because I think the darkest times I was in was when I didn't really like, after I got out of the Marine Corps and I didn't have a lot of friends here, because the friends that I did have were into some crazy shit. So I wasn't hanging out with them as much, you know, drugs and all this stuff. And so, hardcore, you know, I'm not judging anybody, whatever. But so I was finding other friends and, or just hanging out by myself. And I was just trying to meet women to like hook up with or date or whatever. But I didn't have any real example in my life. And then once I made some, like I got a motorcycle a couple years later, and yeah, that added to like the womanizing, but I think my behavior got better because I was around other men, and some of them were married, and not that they were like, you know, no one's whatever, they were perfect because everybody's perfect, but they were good guys, you know, and they would help people out. So it kind of like reminded me that that's the kind of guy I was. And I also wanted to emulate that. And now I found this other community with Owen Benjamin and all these guys. And I have a lot of friends still from that time that are still really good guys that line up with this. So it's great. But you meet these other people, and when you're around them, they're just, you know, like you're talking to people that like, oh, I went hunting and the food you're eating is all I caught and I grew on my land and, you know, I'm doing this, and all these people doing different things, and they're exchanging ideas, and they just make you want to be better people because they're talking about all the ways that they've healed themselves. So it just makes you want to do it too. And in the same way, if you're hanging out with people that are enabling your addictions or whatever the heck they are, you know, or your spirals, then you're going to do it more. You're going to feel comfortable around them. And it's tough when you have to kind of not associate with people. But if you're at that level, there is another level though, because I'm not saying you just cut people out of your life. There's another level where you can attain to where you should be able to just be around anybody and you'll be okay, as long as they're not like physically whatever. But if they're verbally attacking you, you're just like, whatever, dude, like in one ear, out the other, whatever. You could just see them as a child, like crying at you, you know, that's the truth, but it's not easy. Again, I'm just saying that, you know, because I don't want people thinking that you should just cut people out of your life. Sometimes you have to, though. Sometimes you got to get space. There's a lot of different things, you know, you got to work on you in a positive way of self-love, not like a narcissist way, like we were saying. And yeah, because that's really, and what that reminds me of really is because everybody wants to know, how can I make the world better? How can I help people around me? I want, you know, I could see that they're screwing up, because people like me and you, Sharon, we have like a really high perspective. We know all this about psychology. So sometimes when we're talking to other people who aren't into this, other people in our lives, we might be able to see their problems a little more clearly. So we want to kind of just tell them, but we've learned that never works out. Everyone listening to this knows that, you know, people never want to hear the truth. It's the most offensive thing. So what can you do, right? Well, I say maybe you could just start surrounding yourself with better people. You make yourself better. And then when you have another group of people that you go hang out with, maybe if they're not a total loss, they're not just sitting around doing fucking drugs and drinking all day, right? If it's a group of people who are good people, but maybe they just, whatever it is, right? They're lost on certain areas. You hanging out with them, and then you're that example. They see all the things you're doing. Then they see that you're like, wow, wait, you have a podcast. You wrote a book. You know, you do comedy, all this stuff. They're like, wow, I could do that too. If, you know, if this guy's doing it, I could probably do it. I mean, they don't realize I'm a genius and they probably would fail. No, I'm just kidding. You know, anybody could write a book or get on stage or do any of these things or whatever it is you want to do, travel the world, or, you know, it's what's really holding you back from that. But I kind of think I got lost on that a little bit, but yeah, that's really what I wanted to get across with that.
Yeah.
It'll come back to me.
It's okay. It made me think of, like a couple of things you said previously, and what you just said now made me think of this meme or infographic that I saw earlier in Telegram, and it was called The Laws of Detachment. And it just says, allow others to be who they are. Allow yourself to be who you are. Don't force situations. Solutions will emerge. Uncertainty is reality. Embrace it. And to me, that just spoke volumes, and it says it all. It just let people
be. It goes back to safety or freedom. Do you want safety or do you want to be free? You know, and there's a level of preparedness where you could be, maintain your safety, but also be a free being to do what you really want to do and express yourself how you want to express and interact in this world how you want to, in a way that's, you know, that like in a way of natural law, golden rule, that kind of stuff, right? In the way we're interacting with people. There's this way to do it. Oh shit. I lost what I was saying again. Anyway, so I get so excited, you know.
It's okay. I get it. It happens to me too. But it also reminds me of do you want to be right, or would you rather be right, or would you rather be happy? And one of my friends, Karen Shotzi Bear, has told me this. She says that someone told her this about, because she has people in her life that, you know, would constantly just go against the grain with her. And if she said something, they'd go the other way and they'd be like, well, blah, 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 blah. Well, why do you have to this? And it's like, does she have to be right with them? Can she just let them just like, would you rather be right, or would she rather be happy? So like, if somebody just keeps pushing the button and keeps saying, no, it's this way, or no, it's that way, or how dare you, or how could you, or you know what? Let them think whatever they want to think. Like, clearly you haven't convinced them and you won't convince them. So why are you going to try? Like, would you rather be happy? just let him be.
Yeah. I mean, I have a really, this is kind of weird to bring up. I guess it doesn't matter, but I have a really good friend and we haven't hung out as much lately, but we hang out once in a while and he doesn't have the same worldview as I do. I'll just say it that way about like what space might be. So I heard through another friend that he was just talking about it. But the thing is, like previously, I would have minded try to argue with him or brought it up or try to like say, what about this? What about that? And show all these sick proofs. Right. And now I just don't say anything. I'm just like, what about this? This is crazy. But then we just talk about other things. It doesn't matter at the end of the day. It doesn't fucking matter, dude. You know, sometimes you just got to let those things go. You don't have to agree with everybody on every single point and you're not going to convince them. And I tell you, the best thing to do is just be happy, because if they know you and you're living to your true potential and you're actually happy, they'll be like, fuck. And it's contagious. And they'll be like, why is this person happy? You know, and they'll be like, I want to do that. I mean, they might not, but then they'll just push you out of their life. They'll do it. You don't even have to, because you'll be a shining example, but beacon, also a mirror to these people. So some people it's too bright and they're not ready to see it yet. So you're going to drive them away, but it's okay. And some people might try to hurt you, whatever it is. But again, like you said, the uncertainty, if you learn to love that unknown, you know, and as long as you're prepared, you could pretty much handle anything. And then until you can't, and then you don't got to worry about it, because you know, you're on to the next.
Trying to hurt you.
Yeah. I think that's another thing, you know, it's about the fear of death. Like, what are you really afraid of about pain and stuff like that? And that's why meditation helps, especially sometimes if you get strict with it and you try to sit down in a certain position and just stay there and your legs hurt and you just sit there and let it hurt. And then like you let it like go sleep for a little while. I mean, I'm not suggesting any of this, but people have said this before. If you could sit in uncomfortable positions, because you just get used to uncomfort. Like when I was in the Marine Corps in boot camp, we did a bunch of these long hikes. They call them humps. And they were like marches, whatever you go with your full pack on and you do like 10, 12 miles. And wow. After boot camp's 3 months, and then you get a month, you go home for 10 days and then you go back for combat training. So you're not, you know, you're technically a Marine, so you don't have to call everybody sir. And you have weekends off, but it's really weird. But anyway, you're still like a maggot basically. But anyway, so there was one that I remember before Christmas, we had to go on this one. It was like 12 miles and it was raining and then it started sleeting and all this stuff. And my shoulders just were like hurting. Like, I mean, after a while, but I just had this way to like kind of turn it off. I can't really explain it, but I just didn't focus on the pain. I was able to like get through it and overcome. And ever since then, I've had this different relationship with pain. And I think that if you could, whatever it is in your own life, figure it out. It's one of those keys, you know, it definitely helps you, because then the fear goes away. You know, it's not as bad, because everybody think fears the pain of how they're going to exit this realm. That's really what it is. The death. It's like, they're not really, well, I'm not really worried about what's on the other side, but I don't want to like have my fucking head chopped off. You know, I mean, yeah, it does sound like it sucks, but I don't know.
Right.
How did we get to the topic of chopping off heads? What's going on over here, Sharon?
I don't know. But there were a couple of things that at the tail end of our notes that I think we didn't get to. Do you know what they are?
I think it's porn new and how I started to feel gay.
Sure. Yes. Those are the ones.
Well, what happened was, listen, I make fun of everybody. I mean, equal opportunity, make fun of her.
That's what comedians are.
So about the time I started doing comedy in 2013, I was still pretty, you know, full swing womanizing. And I was at the point where I was starting to realize that I had this whole notion that monogamy wasn't natural. So that was my justification. And there's all kinds of evidence you could find that there are civilizations where, and I think it's both. Like, that's what I come to the conclusion. Like, it's both. Like, you can have a society however you fucking want, right? It's like, we're like computer programs. Our brains are kind of like a computer in that way. And we will adapt to any situation. So sometimes it's great and it works out. Sometimes it's not so great. But anyway, in our current civilization, it's different. But I was like, you know, this isn't right. And that's why. And I used that justification to justify my behavior and say, oh, I can't just stay with one woman because I get bored after a while, because, you know, monogamy is not natural. That's why. And so I was on this whole path, and then I started doing comedy, and that led me to like plant medicines. I started doing like weed and stuff, and then some other stuff. And as I became like, did this and meditated alongside that, I started meditating first, everybody, and continued. And that helps a lot with the psychedelics, allegedly. It helps you maintain your center of balance, allegedly. You might not even need psychedelics, allegedly. So anyway, everyone's different, man. You know, I don't try to recommend nothing for nobody. Just sunshine. So anyway, go get sunshine.
Rainbows and butterflies.
I'm yeah. So as I kept to womanize and all this stuff, it just kind of started to feel different. And I was telling Sharon about this one time where I was hanging out. This has nothing to do with sex. I'll just say that up front. So no one's like, what? I was hanging out with a guy friend of mine and we were doing like a dinner at his house. There's like a family thing involved, like a holiday or whatever. And I stopped by there and hang out. And I was like super high out of my mind on weed or edible. Somebody gave me a cookie or some shit. I don't know. And as I sat there, I'm looking around. I'm like, I felt like I was gay. I'm like, this is kind of like a gay relationship. And again, there's no judgments or anything wrong with it, but I was like, am I gay? I'm like, well, I'm not gay. I'm attracted to women. So why am I having these feelings of being gay? And then like, sometimes when I'd be with women, I'm like, this just feels like it's kind of gay. And then when I came across all this stuff, you know, then I went through the period and I stopped kind of having as much sex and then I slowed down. And then in 2019, I kind of stopped completely, but not that I won't have sex or anything. I just, the opportunity hasn't presented itself really in a way that would be healthy for me to further my path. So, you know, I'm not judging anyone. I don't, you know, some people say you should never have sex till you get married. Some people, all this stuff. Life is life, whatever gets you through. You know, maybe if I'm on vacation sometime and I meet a girl and it seems like we jive and we're going to have sex, maybe it's just going to happen. You know, I'm not going to say it's not going to happen, but I'm not going to be objectifying her. You know what I'm saying? It's like, why are you drinking that glass of wine? Is it because you're trying to escape or is it because you're trying to enjoy life a little bit? You know, it's like that whole thing. So, in my situation though, I really did feel like I was displaying that behavior. And then when I came across what Owen had to say about when you're just going around having sex with women and you're womanizing, it's behavior of a homosexual, or like it's basically sodomite behavior. So it's behavior that's not resulting in children. And that's what the act of sex is supposed to be for. So even if you're married to somebody, you don't have to, I'm not saying you have to have sex every time just to have kids. But what I mean is there was none of that going on. It was just all for sense pleasure. Right. And so
Escapism.
Yeah. Baby escapism. No, I love that term too from last week. Go check out last week's episode. Baby escapism was hilarious. Dude, my fucking niece was over and she had a, I'm like, baby escapism.
That's a fire. No.
my brother and niece don't really, or my brother and his wife, they don't use a pacifier that much. It's, you know, the boomers when they, but whatever. Oh. It's fine. She's a crusher. I could already tell my niece. She's only a couple months old and I can already tell she's going
to,
you know,
she said, hey to you, dude.
Yeah. Plus, yeah, she likes to express herself. I love it. She reminds me of my aunt Kathy, who is definitely knows how to express herself. I'll just say that. I love you, Aunt Kathy. Anyway. So yeah, that's how I felt. And then I heard Owen say that. And it was like something that clicked in my head and I was like, oh my God. And again, no judgments, dude, you know, go out and fuck whatever you want. Listen, fuck it until you get sick of it. That's what I say. And then you'll really be done and sick of it. You won't be phony holy, as Ram Dass used to say.
You're right.
You know, because that's going to cause a lot of other shit. Then you're pushing down is going to come out other places.
Yeah. You have even to sicker get behavior, sick.
Could it be?
Yeah. Yeah. You have to get sick of something.
Mm.
I mean, do it till you're sick of it. Eventually you'll get sick of it and then you'll be done. You'll be like, I'm never doing this again.
Yeah. And if you're a hot lady, just
or, call you know, in that person. Way, like you're never going to do it for that, for those reasons. You know what I'm saying? Like like me when I got sick of the drinking and going home and getting tired and being like, feeling like I was half drunk, trying to sleep, couldn't sleep, waking up, feeling like crap. Like I was done with that. And I'm like, no, it's not worth it. I don't want to drink. I don't even want a little bit. Cause then I know that a little bit's going to lead to more and I'm just not going to do it. So I don't need it to have fun. I'm already a very energetic person, so I don't need all that stuff.
And think about this. If you're already drinking and you're in a cycle of escapism, like that's why you're drinking, so you put yourself in a cycle. And then if something come along that might trigger your trauma cycle, you might go, not you, but a person might go sleep with a guy or a girl because of that, you know? Cause there was definitely some times where I've slept with women and looking back, I'm just like, it was a kind of weird experience. And now seeing it, I'm like, oh my God, she's probably just like, trauma, like something, you know what I mean? It's, that's why these thoughts like this, it's like, oh, it's like fucks me over. But again, I forgive him for I didn't know what I was doing. I'm like, oh, this is great. I'm crushing it. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
And like, plus, again, listen, I'm a generous lover. You know what I'm saying? I'm not like a one pump chump. I'm like a, you know, so I actually, you know, I should tell the story too. There was a woman I met when I was in the Marine Corps. I was probably 96. I think I was 20. And she was 50. No, I'm just kidding. She was, I always loved
Cougar.
No, she was like, I don't know, probably 22 or something like that. Or my age. I can't remember. But I met her at the mall, and I think she had like a business suit on it. She was like really professional. I think she was selling something or whatever. And we were talking, and it ended up, we clicked really well, and we were talking really well. It ended up, she just got right into, like, she had a situation in her past where she was raped. And ever since then, she had a problem having sex with guys, right? This didn't just come out like right away. We were like talking back and forth for like a week or what. I can't remember what it was. But so I went to see her, and we ended up going on a date or whatever and hooking up. And then we eventually had sex. I can't remember if it was that night or whatever it was. And she was able to have sex with me. And it was kind of like I was able to heal her because of, you know, I'm just like this, because she had an issue with men. So I'm just like one that's way chill or whatever it was, you know, or I was able to be gentle with her or whatever it was, you know. So
yeah, she could experience something that wasn't what she experienced before, to let her know that it's okay, that there are men who are normal and they won't treat you like that. So it was for her, it was for her to learn that and to know that.
Yeah, it was like a healing
experience. Yeah.
Because I guess the other guys you try, whatever, maybe there was something they were doing that was triggering her trauma. So I don't always look at everything I did as like a bad thing. You know, that was definitely a good experience. And it's just because, you know, travel or whatever, it just didn't work out. But, you know, because I was in the Marines. But yeah, I think that it wasn't all negative. So I don't want to just go back and like beat myself up. But there are times where I could look back on some things that I did. And I think that's also what gives me some clarity to see like some messed up stuff that's going on where other people just don't want to see it, or they might be a little innocent. Or it's like, no, I'm not innocent. I'm not that innocent. And, you know, I know what's going on here. Yeah. And that's kind of, oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I can relate to what you're saying, because like, I could blame myself for the experiences I've had. Like I was saying, the two dudes recently in the past year, where I just allowed myself to, you know, jump into these faux relationships. Right. And I could be like, I could be mad at myself for that, but they happen for a reason. They happen for me to wake up, to see something, to be aware of something. And then that way I can help people. I wouldn't be able to tell you right now what I'm telling you if I hadn't gone through that myself. So I think these things, and it's funny because those things happen to me like this. It's not like I planned for it. It's funny because it just happened. And it was almost like I knew it was like source telling me, this is just for a learning experience for you. Like, so it is what it is. Like you can't go and, you know, hit yourself. What is it? Penance. You can't hit yourself and get mad at yourself for things.
Yeah.
You roll with it. Let it be. It happened for a reason.
It's like I always talk about, once you realize, if you really are on this path of self-healing, you should just take that moment to celebrate and realize, because a lot of people aren't, and it's not going to be a straightforward path where you're attaining perfection. You're going to think that you might have fucked up. But I think once you get to the point where you realize you really can't fuck up, no matter what you do, you know, you could hurt people and you could break some, I mean, you could butt up against some cosmic laws. I mean, you can't break them, but you could, you know what I'm saying? You could like cause some bad shit out there, but you can't really do anything quote unquote wrong, because it's, from what I've seen, it looks like it's just going to cycle back and it's going to keep hitting you.
Yeah.
You know, and when I say you can't do anything wrong, I mean, in the eyes of like God or the creator or the all. And I know people might spiral when I say that, because obviously if there is a creator, he would want you to attain to his, you know, that's like what the Jesus character is about, like Krishna, like a God embodied on earth to show you the way. So yes, they do want you to, but from the perspective of what I see, where like in the Tao it says everything's perfect, and like how God views things as, you know, like God's perfection, basically. So at the end of the day, from that perspective, it is all perfect. You can't really do anything wrong. You are going to hurt. You're just going to make it harder for yourself. That's all.
Yeah.
And those and around you.
Yeah. I like what you said about that. And I think it's really what it boils down to is that religious groups have caused this whole, or have propagated this whole concept of God's mad at you, or God hates you, or God's angry, or why are you doing this? Because God's going to be upset with you and then you're going to go to hell. That is not the point.
Yeah. And I think what's true about that is, like, so if you're going around and you're doing something and you're not living in accordance with the golden rule or whatever natural law, however you want to look at it, then you might start experiencing a lot of negative experiences. All these things are going to start happening to you.
Karma.
So in that way, that's kind of the universe's way, or God, or the all's way of telling you to get your shit together. So they are right, but you don't have to go through them to absolve yourself. And you do have to take personal responsibility. Action is required. Like we always say, you can't just say, oh, I pray to Jesus and all my sins are forgiven. I mean, that's my point of view. You know, I'm saying you could do that as well. That's great if you want to, but you should also live like that guy.
Right. There's action required. You can't just be like, I'm absolved of all my sin, but I'm just going to keep doing what I always do. I think it requires you to recognize where you can make some changes and make the changes for the better. And that is what that's all about.
And what's one big change that a lot of people talk about making that made a big difference in their life, Sharon? And it's probably the next thing we're going to talk about. If you're ready. Porn.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. Porn. So pornography. Since we're talking about sex and this is 6.6, we might as well talk about porn. And some of the ideas I came across. One of the first things that I came across, it was like Ari Shaffir, this comedian, and he was talking about how he doesn't whack off. And I was like, oh, that's crazy. Cause back then I was like, yeah, just whacking and hooking up. And he's like, I don't like to, because he's like, I like to save it. And like, I actually like to go out and look, because it gives me more motivation to actually find a girlfriend or a wife or whatever, or like a mate, you know? And I was like, oh, I can respect that, because you're not just shooting blanks. So if you take the negative aspect of that, what's porn doing? Porn is like, if you're a marathon runner, instead of doing that, you just run short bursts all day on like, on a treadmill, and you're not going anywhere. You're not getting anything done and you're wasting all your energy. And then when it comes time for the big thing, you're just tired. You know, you just lack the motivation, because I think that's really what it is. It's a drive killer. It's a motivation killer, because at the end of the day, I know for me, I knew I could just be like, oh, I could just go home and take care of myself and watch some porn. And it pushes all the buttons. It does, you know, it makes you nice and sleepy and tired, and you feel like you're accomplished. Like you did something, like you have this feeling of accomplishment, you know, and it's this total false feeling of accomplishment. It's crazy. So it's really, at the end of the day, becomes like a drug, and it keeps you in a mode of inaction. And that's really the problem that I see that people alerted me to. And I was like, yes, but there's many more problems with it. But that's like one of the first ones I want to talk about, you know?
Yeah. You'd also said that it's like taking advantage of people.
Yeah. That part yes, there is taking advantage of people, but the other part is like the scenarios of where. So a lot of the scenarios that are created in porn are where the woman or whoever is taken advantage of. And it's like, so if you look at that, and again, not to be like I'm some fucking prude, right? Maybe that's just your fantasy. Okay, but then why is that the fantasy? And then why does that seem to be the overall arching fantasy that's in this whole zeitgeist? You know, you get like the stepdaughter porn. That's like a huge one. And all these scenarios, like a casting couch, or like a boss, you know, a boss, like in a girl works for him, he hooks up. So all these scenarios, and I even found myself drawn to these scenarios too, of like power, right? Over somebody, and to use that power and to put them in a situation where they're not, it's like, they're kind of unsure if they really want to do it. And it's like, you're getting off on that. So again, what is that? You're attacking somebody, right? It's like this attack on the feminine. It's an attack on the sacred feminine. So in my own experience, I saw it was because of the abandonment issues that I perceived as a child. I'll just leave it like that. This way it's not like a judgy thing, right? And maybe I hated my mom because of it, and I was acting out and lashing out in all these other women. But I wasn't directly saying anything bad about my mom, or I didn't feel anything animosity toward her. You know, I still love her and everything, but it was like a repressed feeling. And I was just, like we said before, instead of feeling that feeling toward of animosity or hatred, or not, I don't want to say hatred or whatever it was toward my mom, instead of feeling that toward her, I was just doing it toward all the women in my life besides her.
Mm-hmm.
And once I realized that, you know, I was like, what the fuck? It was a slow realization. Like I realized that after I stopped. So, you know, and it's because I saw other people doing it, and then I would start to judge them, and I'm like, why, how am I judging them? Cause I was doing the same thing. And then I was like, oh shit. You know, like, oh man. Yeah. It's like series of realizations, and then more dark nights of the soul. And that, this is why people don't want to do this work, because it's brutal, because you get to have to face what a piece of shit you were. And then you have to see the right path, and it's a hard path sometimes. And then you're like, I gotta do this. It's not as satisfying. It's like doing things the hard way. But once you get it rolling, the synchronicities start lining up, and then you start meeting people like Sharon, and it's fucking crazy. Yeah. So you start a show, and then everyone thinks you're the best, and the whole world starts chanting, "Let's go, Brandon." It's crazy.
Dude, you manifested that. Could it be?
Let's go me. Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. And then you start to, if you could find like-minded people and you start to hang out with those, it's not like you have to cut everyone out. Like we were saying, you just spend some time with them when you can, on online or in person. If you can, really in person is, my experience, been the best. And then you start to turn your light on, and the other people around you in your life that aren't so hip to this or adjacent, they start to move closer to it or move away. And what more would you want? You want the people close to you that you can't stand. Fine. Get out of here if you can't take it. If this light's too bright, go. And you're not even being mean. And then the other ones will just be attracted. And then I guess there's all levels of that. You know, then you're going to get other people who are like, it's not all going to be positive. It's life. But again, that's just how it starts to move.
Absolutely. So can I ask you, maybe we can end with this, but since Owen does say all porno is gay porno.
Mm.
Can you just go into more, or just elaborate a little bit on what made you feel gay when you were at your friend's Thanksgiving or whatever it was, whatever event it was that you went to with your friend who was a guy? And then you sat there and you thought to yourself, I feel gay. Why? I just want to comprehend that situation.
It's kind of hard to explain exactly, but I'll try to see how close I can get. So it's kind of like, it's like one of those high moments when you put things together. And when I was there, it was like me, my friend, and his kids, because he was married, but you know, he has ex, whatever. And there's like custody battle. So it was his kids, and I think his dad or his parents, I can't remember. And I was at Thanksgiving at my house, and then I went over there because I was like, ooh, more free food. And while I was there, I was just like really high, and then I just saw what was going on, and it just looked, because I was dressed nice, he was dressed nice, you know what I mean? It was just like, I'm like, what the fuck, you know? And like, I was like, because I like to look at situations sometime as an outward observer of what's going on, you know, and it just seemed weird to me. It was just like, wow, this is fucking crazy. And that was just one of the moments. There's other moments too. I don't know. It just felt like it wasn't doing anything. And I think that's what I meant, because sodomy is you're performing an action, but you're not getting any results. And that's what I had a great time, but I'm saying that's what a gay relationship is. And that's kind of what that looked like. Like if you took a snapshot of that, you probably could use it for like a gay Hallmark card is what I mean. You know, like even though we're still good friends and we're not, you know, that's not what it is. I mean, I would love them. No. But yeah, so it was more of that. How I felt gay. It wasn't like an attraction. I guess it's good.
I just wondered what you meant. Because
It was more like that. Like it just seemed like a situation out of a movie or something. It was just really weird. And it struck me at that point. And I was like, wow. I'm like, what am I doing? Again, not that I was hanging out with my friend, but just, it just made me think of other situations in my life.
Okay, well, if you can, think of one more so that I can have some more clarity.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Well, I know there was a time where there was a girl that every once in a while I would call her and we'd hook up, depending on our statuses. And one time she came over, I hadn't seen her for a while, and I was super high on weed. And I just couldn't, I don't know, it felt weird. It felt funny. Like, I just kept laughing. And she's like, I'm like, I don't know. I just can't. I go, I think it's because I'm high. And she's like, oh, I like to have sex when I'm high. And I'm like, I don't know. I go, I guess I just can't have sex when I'm high. And what I'm realizing now is I saw the absurdity in it. And that's what was making me laugh, because it was just a pointless thing that I was doing at my time where I couldn't have been like getting my shit together and like, you know, studying the tarot and getting into this or whatever it is, you know, I could have been walking a path again.
It was escapism and you were recognizing you were like high.
And sodomy is escapism. It's the same, you know, it's adjacent.
It is.
Yeah. So
at least could it be? I think it could be.
I'm saying the act of sodomy. I'm not saying somebody who's gay or whatever. I'm saying the act of sodomy, which is something you're doing and you're not creating any examples, because it could be a physical sod. Like, it doesn't have to do with sex. Like, it's just a concept, right? Like, you're performing an action that normally yields something, but you're doing it knowing you're not going to yield it, and you're not yielding anything. You're grounding out, basically. Like, electricity is really what it means. So I realized that's what the fuck I was doing, I guess. And it was silly to me. So I just was laughing. I'm like, and then when Owen said that thing about a gay guy, I'm like, fuck, yeah, dude, like a gay guy. Like, again, no judgments. I'm just saying, like, I know this sounds like very judgmental. I everybody has their own path and way to get through this life and everything. Everyone's mm-hmm. been through their own shit, dude. So whatever makes you not blow your fucking brains out, dude, do it until you get sick of it and do the next one. Just, you know, just listen to my show and hit thumbs up and don't fucking hate me, because I don't hate anybody. I'm just... We're just talking about our, you know, calling them as I could have ended up a fucking sodomite. I'm sure it was probably close. Like, trust me, some of the situations I was in, it was crazy. So, you know, no judgments. Like, I have a cousin who's gay. One of my uncles is gay. You know, like, I don't, who knows, man, you know?
Yeah, no judgments. I like have had friends and know people who are, and they're very lovely, sweet people.
I judge people based on their merit, not on who they fuck, you know, but if... The thing about why we're talking about this and being gay and sodomy is somebody's kind of trying to push a lifestyle or normalize something or something like that. I see why you shouldn't hate anybody for what they do, but to, you know, it's just that, I don't know. It's weird. It's when something becomes cool, then people are like, well, are you doing it because it's cool, or are you doing it because you're really that? You know, when there's a lot of fakers in society, and that's the problem. There's fakers. It doesn't really matter what they're faking they're doing. It's just that there's fakers. Why are they faking? These aren't judgments. It's because they don't feel comfortable. They hate themselves, right? Why do they hate themselves? Probably because when they're younger, they suffered abandonment issues. Why? Because people have to work two jobs. You know, they think they do. It's all this crazy stuff. It's one on top of the other, on top of the other. And then it's a straw one that breaks the camel's back. And then eventually you get to where we are in society, where people run around covering their faces and shit, you know? So that's all we're saying, man. You know, again, go out and engage in your sodomy, have a goddamn good time. And I'm not even being sarcastic. You know, I fucking enjoyed it. I still think back on some of the shit I did, like, man, that was crazy. Like, so, and just know that there's an expiration date. That's all. Because one day, and what I mean by that is one day
you will get,
maybe not even in this life, you're just going to look at yourself and you're like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, why am I, you know, why do I keep killing all these rabbits? No, it's a Steinbeck fucking George, the bunnies of mice and men. Anyway. Yeah. So does that kind of clarify it for you a little better? I'm sure that
puts I suppose. I'll take it.
Would you want to hear me like say gay fantasy, Sharon? What's going
on? No. I just wanted to get an idea for what you meant by you felt that way. Yeah. And I think I see what you mean. And when you explain that engaging in something that is not getting you anywhere is basically what you mean by that.
Well, it's not yielding any fruit. You know, you're still going somewhere, but where are you going?
Yeah. Yielding any fruit.
You're always moving. You're always going somewhere. You just got to be conscious of that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Life is a highway.
You want to ride it.
That's right. All night long. All right. Is that the end of the show then? Is that what that means? Stick a fork in it?
You're going my way. I'm just kidding. I don't know. Is that how it goes?
Yeah. If you're going my way, I want to ride it all night long. That's how it goes.
Okay. I think that's the only part of the song I know.
Life is a highway. How dare you, Sharon?
I know. I grew up under a rock, so.
Yeah, and I grew up under crack rock, so I heard a lot of Tom Cochran. And then later, Rascal Flatts did it, but I used to see that video on MTV all the time. This old guy, like, life is a highway. Anyway, so, yeah, thanks for everyone in the chat, too. Again, thanks for joining us. I know I had a wedding to do tonight, so I probably wasn't as active in the chat, but thanks for coming. And, you know, we got more episodes to do, maybe even one more on this, but it might be a private one. So stay tuned for that. And I don't know. Anything else you want to add to this episode, Sharon?
I think we about covered it.
All right, cool.
I hope so.
All right. So what do we say then to the fine people?
If you're not over Sharon,
then you're totally not Karen.
At all.
At all. Then you are a Karen. So stop being a Karen.
Yeah.
If you're not over Sharon, you're a Karen. Bye. We're making claims.